You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
In 2009, Irk went to the dark side and became a music podcaster. He discovered a wide, wide selection of music, apart from Dozy Do by Julie the Band. It's now 2010, and Irk comes down the pipe and into your ears, bigger, stronger and faster. Every Friday, it's Irk FM time. Now here's your host of Irk FM from Channel Irk, here's Irk.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 74 of Irk FM. Irk FM is my music podcast that comes down the pipe and into your ears at the end of each week, bringing you quality, pod-safe, and independent music from around the world. This is Irk FM episode 74, and for more information, you can go to www.irkfm.com. Irk FM, of course, is a part of Channel Irk. Now, for the last few weeks, we've been interviewing artists that have been played on Irk FM before. And this one's going to be an interesting one because we're going across the ditch from Australia to New Zealand. And on the line, we have Sean and we also have Danny from The Connoisseurs. Hi, guys.
Hey, Irk. How you going, mate?
Good, mate. How are you guys going?
Yeah, we're going very good. Not too bad at all. Today, from early morning.
Awesome. Now, you guys have got the whole Anzac thing going, which myself and you guys and any other Australians and Kiwis listening would understand, but a lot of my audience are from the UK and from America, so they might not understand the sort of funny relationship that Aussies and Kiwis have in relation to the rest of the world. Would you like to briefly describe, you know, the whole Kiwi-Aussie thing?
I think it all started with an underarm boulder. Yeah, it's a cricket match a while back. But we, us New Zealanders, like to think of Australia as our Western Island. But no, you're right, mate. There is a, you know, that very, very, I think a very good natured and very little brother, big brother kind of scenario that goes on between Australia and New Zealand. We like to give each other hell, but at the end of the day, we also get on like houses on fire together. So it's a good dynamic to have in a band as well.
And like what happened to me when I went to America last year, some people actually thought that I was from New Zealand, and I'm like, yeah, I'm happy with that. You know, I was happy that you were able to identify as something south of the equator.
Oh, that's quite interesting to hear that they'd heard of New Zealand.
Yeah.
Most of the time we get, where's that? Somewhere in Argentina or something. But, I think we had a good relationship with the Australians going back, a long way back, really. We've been there for each other at times and we've been against each other at times, but at the end of the day, it all comes down really to a little friendly banter, I think. Yeah, definitely.
Yes, definitely. It's like we can pick on each other as much as you want, but, you know, from anyone from the other side of the equator tries to do it, you know, we join up and say, you know, keep your hands off our islands.
Exactly. The only issue we have with Australians is they keep on claiming all of our best bands, mate.
And I actually think that I might have been guilty of that at some stage the first time I played you guys.
That's okay.
No, it's all good. So, Sean, would you like to tell us how you got your start into music? What sort of inspired you? What got you into music in the first place?
I suppose originally I come from a very musical family. Both my parents were involved in music or musical. My father sang with a band back in the 60s. My mother is kind of like, got very, very good musical ear, could play a number of instruments and that. And growing up, we were just surrounded by music. My father was a jazz fanatic, for example, and so listened to a lot of jazz and a lot of rock and roll and such like. My mother was more into the Motown, Stax kind of vibe with soul singers and that. So you just up in this whole environment where music was within the house all the time. And that kind of, that certainly, certainly influenced us children. I had a couple of brothers and then a sister, and my older brother was a musician as well, very, very talented guitar player, and I naturally just gravitated towards playing guitar when I was probably about 14 or 15, and sort of went from there. Played the old thing in covers bands when I was younger, and certainly did that for a period of time, and then I suppose went to the UK in kind of early 20s and started becoming involved in writing material at that stage and being involved in original music, playing acoustically really to begin with, and just playing just like acoustic cafes and such like around the UK. Returned to New Zealand and sort of just taking it, you know, a little bit more seriously from there, and started a band originally there, which eventually ended up evolving into the Connoisseurs. Just to paraphrase, might have been, you know, music's been part of my life for a very, very long time.
How about you, Danny?
Surprisingly, a very similar story, really. Brought up with music all of my young life, the Beatles, Stones, Kinks, Floyd, through my mother, who was very heavily into her British pop rock at the time. Progressed into the school choirs, etc. And then took leave from the music side through sport, really. Was very concentrated on rugby and cricket for many a year. And then was dealt a bit of an injury blow and couldn't sit around sort of twiddling my thumbs on the weekends anymore, and just happened to meet up with a band in the UK one day in the pub, as you do in the UK, and sort of hit it off with them, and they were looking for a vocalist, and I decided, you know, I had nothing on anymore through sports, so it was time to get something going again, and that went on for a while until I took the decision to return to New Zealand after 12 years in the UK. And I actually Sean answered an advert, one of the two, what I had placed on a website over there. And we got chatting, and we had very similar musical influences and tastes, and decided to set up a band there, which, as Sean said, developed into the Connoisseurs.
So you both mentioned going to the UK. Is it true that when Aussies and Kiwis go to the UK, they mainly hang out with Aussies and Kiwis?
So, yeah, surprisingly, it is pretty much true. They have their dedicated pubs and clubs, etc., where they tend to meet up. And there's usually a Kiwi or an Aussie sports team touring where you find you're bumping into each other all the time. Funnily enough, I probably bumped into more Kiwis than I knew in London than what I did when I returned to New Zealand. It's funny. I suppose people doing their two-year OE, all the overseas, because that's your overseas experiences, Aussies and Kiwis, they do, they're only there for 2 years, they do primarily hang out with other Aussies and Kiwis. If you're there for a longer period of time, both myself and Danny were there for a prolonged period of time, you do actually start kind of assimilating more into the English culture. You start going out with English girls, obviously, you know, because they are classy. And you do become a little bit more, in sync with the young English culture over there as well. But primarily when you first get there, though, all you want to do is really go out with the Aussies and Kiwis and probably pass as much as possible, mate.
So when you come back to New Zealand after that amount of time, how does it feel like? Does it feel like home again, or did much change in the meantime?
Well, personally, my return, I found very slow. I found it very hard to return to New Zealand, certainly from the London lifestyle, the bump and grind of London on a daily basis, travelling the tube, getting to work and everything, so hustle and bustle. I found, returning to New Zealand, the old Kiwi attitude, everything can be done tomorrow. and it does take, you know, quite a bit of time to get your head around that after sort of racing around London on a daily basis. It can be quite a hard transformation to make. It probably took me a good 12-month period to settle back into the New Zealand way of life. But certainly, you know, at the end of it, it's always home. It always will be home. Wherever we're sort of travelling, the roots and ties are always there. You know, very proud Kiwis, but it can be a real shock for the system. representing for such a long time.
So what is the New Zealand music scene and the New Zealand live scene like? How does that compare to anywhere?
It's actually, I think the fair thing to say is there's a lot of talent in New Zealand, in terms of musicians in general. It's just the industry is just not mature enough there. And we certainly found that when we set up bands or performed in bands back home. There's just not the support because it's not the money, it's not the promotion, you really need to be in the higher echelon and be signed to one of the majors to really make an impact on the New Zealand music scene. If you're not, there's some very, very high quality independent labels over there. Fine Nun, for example, which has been world renowned as an independent label. But again, they cater for a certain genre of music as well. I certainly found, I think Danny would agree, that the New Zealand music scene goes through these real phases of what's in, what's trendy or what's fashionable at that time. And certainly when we were putting the Connoisseurs together in the earlier incarnation of the Connoisseurs, which was a band called State of the Art, we found like the whole garage band D4 kind of Datsuns kind of thing was in. And certainly the D4 and Datsuns has had some quite notable overseas success and got some very good reviews. But that kind of permeated through the whole scene, particularly in Auckland. You're either kind of like this four-piece garage, had to be this four-piece garage rock and roll band, or on the other end of the scale, Tool. Like that whole kind of, metal kind of new metal sound was very much in as well. And that's what New Zealand's like to a certain extent. Even though it's a small market, there's very, very distinct musical followings and musical feels as well. And obviously the hip-hop scene over there is very big. The South Auckland Polynesian rap and hip-hop and roots thing is huge in New Zealand as well. So you kind of find that, you have to pick your niche and go for it. And if you're not one of those niches, you kind of struggle a little bit.
Yeah, it can be very hard in New Zealand, especially through the live scene, picking up a following or so to speak. You'll find most New Zealand bands do tend to do their trip overseas or, to the UK or Australia or America. And, before you know it, they'll be creating waves suddenly offshore where they've been trying to create waves in their own home country.
A great example, that is Lady Hawk.
Yeah,
look what's happened to her. She basically would have been unheard of in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And looking at her history, she started playing in New Zealand and gigs in New Zealand. Another band which maybe overseas listeners know as well, Urk, is Cut Off Your Hands, which is a New Zealand indie band that had some good press over in the UK in the last couple of years. And virtually unknown in New Zealand, mate, and certainly did not have a following in New Zealand. It's like, as Danny said, it's like you have to go overseas, get a bit of a profile or a reputation or a following overseas before you're actually recognised back home.
And by then, of course, by the time they return to New Zealand, that's generally when they claim all the Aussies.
So, have things such as social networking, like Facebook and Twitter and MySpace and the like, has that helped Kiwis?
I think it's helped everybody, to a certain extent. It certainly helps to raise your profile, et cetera. I think the thing with those sites is they can definitely be a trap, though. There's a lot of, people who are possibly not looking after the best interests of the band or the music that the band are producing. There's a lot of contacts that come through on a daily basis that, we want to sign you, blah, blah, we've heard your music on MySpace and here's a contract to look through. And, once you sit down and look through these contracts, you really have to question, who's been looked after this month. So I think those networks do help you raise a profile. I think bands, especially the younger bands, need to be very savvy, though, with those sites, with the opportunities that can come through. And that seems to be growing and probably actually getting worse on a daily basis at the moment.
Yeah.
You've really got to have your wits about you when it comes to that side of the business side, shall we say, of the industry. But certainly raising the profile in your own country and overseas, we get a lot of interest at the moment in America, for instance, that we wouldn't have got without those networks. So,
yeah,
it's a bit of a double-edged sword, really, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree with that, Irk, as well. I think for a New Zealand band, a young New Zealand band coming up, I'm at the moment maybe sitting in the South Island, sitting in Auckland somewhere, you know, it's great. They can do an EP, they can do a demo, they can chuck it up on the MySpace site. Automatically, they've got the potential to create a following and an audience. It's a good channel to market in that way. It's a good channel to sell your material. But at the same time, there is just so much out there. And he said, you get contacted from people continuously that want to offer you the world, and then you start drilling down to it a little bit, and you find they just have a professional structure, professional approach to back up what they're promising as well. So it certainly is a two-edged sword. But in terms of getting music and getting music from I suppose countries which have been less exposed on the international market, it's been a godsend, I think, for a lot of bands. Whether you can actually use it as a way of actually being a musician, you know, to five, having a career out of music, I question that. I think the stock standard ways of being successful and getting somewhere in the music industry are still very much in place, and I still think those structures need to be pulled down or reorganized in some way so people can actually use, you know, the internet and general social networking site to actually be able to make a living out of producing music and be able to make music their career. And I'm not sure where that's happening.
So that would be your ultimate goal, to become full-time and not have to worry about a day job like so many people that I speak to?
Well, I think ultimately, you know, we just want to... We're at the moment, you know, we're looking for a channel for to get our music out there, you know, to support the following. If we could get, you know, the kind of support that would allow us to do that, most definitely that's what we'd be looking for. I think any musician who's probably come as far to the point that we're currently at, you know, it's got to be the ultimate goal. It doesn't have to be, of course, but it's certainly what we've been striving towards all these years. I think, you know, at the moment, we're producing music, we're getting it out there in our own little way. Hopefully the album will be coming out soon for purchase, etc. But it doesn't provide us with a situation where we can do that at the moment, but certainly the ultimate goal would be along those lines.
Yeah, at the end of the day, as Danny said, I think, any musician, that's what they would like. They'd love to be able to, you know, have a living out of their music. They'd love to be... and not necessarily this big rock star, world famous, whatever. It's just to be able to do music as a way of life and be comfortable doing it. I think, as Danny touched on, we're a little bit more mature. We've been around, and certainly there's been opportunities, even, you know, when we've been younger, where things could have happened and haven't happened. And you just, at the end of the day, being famous or being successful or making a living is not what drives you to write music or perform music. You've got, because you can't do anything else. And whether you're working your 9-to-5 or whatever, you're still going to come home, pick up a guitar, and write a song and such like. And I think that is the overriding drive there. But if you could couple that passion and that drive with you know, an opportunity to make a living out of it, it would just be fantastic. But you got to be realistic as well.
So I think now is a perfect time to play a song. My favourite song from you guys that I've heard so far is Taking Photographs. Who would like to tell me a bit about that song?
I'll talk about it. I wrote Taking Photographs probably about 4 or 5 years ago now. And actually, first incarnation with our first band is a little bit interesting. It was going to be almost like a audio slave kind of rock song. Certainly the chords were designed, drop D tuning, such like, to go that kind of route. And we used to have an old lead guitar player. We used to have a nice little
little riff that used to go over the top of it. And the first incarnation was very much in that vein. And when we hooked up with Lee Bradshaw, our producer, he kind of had a different thought about it and wanted to take it back to acoustic, kind of very, very lush, orchestral kind of song. And I think it's come out wonderfully in that way. And certainly Andy's vocal lines, he's been fantastic as well. The song's really written about, I wrote the song looking at an old photo that my father got of his grandfather who was killed in the First World War. He was a Royal Marine on a British cruiser. And it was an old faded photograph, and I was just looking at him standing there, and I was just thinking about how your life, you go through your life and you go through certain stages of your life, and they're all signified by these photographs. They're all signified about, they signify who you were in your life at that particular point of time. And I suppose that's really what drove the real theme of the song, was the fact that you live your life in a series of images or a series of photographs, and you look back on your life and you reflect on it, and things could have gone one way or the other, but at the end of the day, really your life is that series of photographs, and that's who you are. And I suppose that's what drove writing the song at the end of the day, and it's what the lyrics are very much around.
So without any further ado, this is The Connoisseurs with Taking Photographs.
Thank you.
Back to IRC FM episode 74, and joining me on the line via Skype are Danny and Sean from the Connoisseurs.
And hey guys.
Howdy. We've spoken a bit at length about your half of the band. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Aussie half?
Yeah, well, we've got two offers now with another Kiwi, Josh, as a lead guitar. The other side, the Australian side, is made up of two guys by the name of Ben Random, who we met in Perth. And what can you say about it?
Josh, the guitar player, Kiwi, overseas as well in Ireland for a long period of time, and came back to Perth and was settled here and sort of was started carving a Venetian music scene. I think very talented guitar player, probably more influenced more bluesy side of things. Very, very much a like Kiwi guitar players, they kind of have that real rootsy bluesy kind of feel to them, and he's certainly down that vein. Brendan Thompson, our bass player, very experienced Australian musician, originally from Newcastle, played in a number of bands over there, and has done quite a bit of session work as well. And Ben O'Connor, a drummer at this particular point in time, again comes from a pretty musical. His brother was actually in the first incarnation of Sleepy Jackson over here in Perth for the Australian listeners who know Sleepy Jackson. Just a very multi-instrumental as well. Play guitar, play bass, play drum, and just a great bunch of guys, actually. And I think what the other guys bring in, I think we mentioned it on our MySpace site, I think Kiwis have a natural kind of pop sensibility about them. You look at bands like, Crowded House, Split Ends, Dragon, and the other bands, Evermore, lately, another good Kiwi band coming from Australia. They come with this really good pop sensibility about them. The Aussies bring a bit more of a rock element.
Yeah.
So they certainly are driving, very rhythmically very strong as well. And you see that in Australian music as well. You look at the great Australian bands, and they tend to produce very good rock bands in Australia. So it kind of gives, again, it's a two-edged sword, and it kind of complements each other pretty well.
Makes rehearsals a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when it's like a week.
So how often do you guys get together and play together and tour and get together and play gigs and that sort of thing?
We tend to rehearse twice weekly. Gigging side slowed down a bit for us at the moment, deliberately, that is. We've decided to go down a very much a route of quality, not quantity. We get together as a band just over a beer as well. We all get on really well. We enjoy each other's company. We tend to take music out of it as well and just meet up give each other a bit of banter, enjoy a beer and enjoy each other's company. And it's really become a situation where it's sort of five mates playing together, not five musicians getting together to put on a show for someone else. It has gone down the route of very much a friendship thing. We all get on like a house on fire and we enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, just to, again, just following on from that, Eric, is it's pretty, we found this in New Zealand as well, it's pretty easy to saturate, an area or a location by playing too much. And we found that in Auckland in New Zealand, you can, you know, if you wanted to, you could be digging every week and, you know, playing to three or four people. And certainly in Perth last year, we did our time doing that. We're certainly in a process at the moment. We've taken a step back from the live scene. I've actually injured my shoulder as well, which has been a bit unfortunate, quite badly. So, I've just had surgery on, and, so I'm out of action for at least a couple of months anyway, from playing guitar. But what we've wanted to do, as Danny said, is actually just try and pinpoint some key gigs or key, performances or supports that we wish to do, and aim for those and try to align our live stuff with what we're pushing, you know, marketing promotional wise online as well, and try and link those in together. I think there's also been a few opportunities over here and discussions going on and linking up with another couple of, quite popular Perth bands, and actually showcasing some showcases on and such like as well, which is a good route for us as well.
So now we'll move on to the songwriting, because songwriting and how people come about their songs fascinates me. Who's the main songwriter?
I'm the main songwriter with the band, and basically wrote all the music. Danny comes in on writing lyrics for two or three of the tracks. But basically I sit and write most of the material. Usually on acoustic guitar, I must admit. So fire away, any questions, mate? What do you want to know?
So what comes first? Does the music come first or the words come first generally for you?
I suppose the music comes first for me. I usually come up with an idea, melodically. I might even like it. It's funny how the songwriting process works. You know, I have a little, you know, I even use my mobile phone. I'll come up with ideas driving to work, for example. Little melody, bits of melody comes in my head, and I'll just hum them to myself and record them. I'll go back and I'll sit down with my guitar and, you know, I'll start playing around with a few chords and, you know, to reflect that melody line, or try to put a bit of a bass behind the melody line I've come up with. And that's usually the way I begin the process. The words to me usually come up with its own. I need to have that structure there first, and that melodic energy there first, to actually come up with a suitable lyric or a suitable hook that goes with that melody.
I've often asked that question, and I'll ask you this question as well. Let's say you're asleep at 3 o'clock in the morning and you have a really great idea. What do you wake up, get the mobile phone out, hum the melody, or write the song down? Is that what you do?
I've done it, mate. I've done it. In fact, probably I think a couple of the songs have been like that. I think taking photographs is like that. I just had this melody line coming in my head. As I said, looking at a photo, and I was probably looking at that photo late at night and thinking about that. I suppose that was a case where I had a specific image or a specific theme I wanted to write about. And so kind of the lyrics and the music came at the end of the day. And Danny would probably comment as well, because Danny contributes in terms of lyrics. And that it's much more, yeah, you'll have ideas come up.
Yeah, the idea will generally... The idea will come from the kind of feeling or vibe that I'm getting from the music itself. And then just, I'll pick up something off that, you know, as I say, from the vibe he's getting across, and go with that, really. I tend to always check, you know, did he have anything in mind for it, you know, that he, when he came up with the musical piece. But certainly, it's something that just, I think, fairly naturally tied in for some reason, whatever that is, I don't know, but it tends to be written along the same basis, even though, you know, now and again, on occasions, you know, I have written the lyrics, and I think they have to work with the same vibe as you're putting across.
And when it comes to a live performance, what sort of mental and physical preparations do you both do?
Mentally, I think any live performances, you know, we want to take an approach of being professional. You know, we as a band, we're there to put on a show. We're there to entertain people. I don't think we're self-indulgent as a band. And, you know, you see some artists who you know, basically take more of a, you know, they're an artist. We're there to put on a show and entertain as well. If we can do that at the same time as getting some of the innate themes or the emotion or the songs across, then we've succeeded as a band. To do that, obviously, you know, we rehearse a lot. We rehearse a full set. We rehearse what we're going to say between songs. We also, you know, that's just the dynamics or the elements of in a tight performing band, as well as making sure that everyone knows when they need to play, what they need to play, and the format that they need to play it with as well. Physically, before a gig, obviously Danny can probably comment on the vocal side of things, but obviously as a guitar player, you know, I try and before hitting where we're playing, try and sit down for at least half an hour, 3/4 an hour, and just get my fingers loose, just think about the tracks we're playing, just think about the dynamics on stage. I play with a lot of alternative tuning, for example, so how do I get my guitar, how do I make sure that everything's in tune, in the flow of the gig going, like making sure that, you know, there's not space or time between having another guitar or retuning another guitar. All those things that add to a professional performance, I think, is the things that we're trying to focus on. And obviously being, you know, we like to have a beer or two before going on, just relax and nurse, because everybody has nerves. We don't like to drink too much. Yeah, Danny, do you want to...
It's fairly a natural show for us, really. We are professional. We do have a bit of an image that we try and put across physically, visually. Not nothing out of the top, but certainly we like to look as if we do have high standards. We probably have a natural born performer in the side with Brendan, who, you know, takes away a lot of the on-stage presence, you know, with a bit of a joke here and there, or he tends to play up very well to any hecklers, etc. That side of it. But, you know, we're there to showcase our music, probably not ourselves. It's probably the mentality we go on there with. As I say, because we're five guys who enjoy each other's company, I think that comes across, you know, live as well. There's good energy within the band. We have a good time, and we hope the audience does as well. But it's certainly not about pushing our own, you know, personality, or no one on stage in our group has their own ego or alter ego that they're pushing across. It's all very much a natural sort of showcase for the band, really.
Yeah. And I think, just to follow that up, yeah, I think the music speaks for itself with the concert, I think we do put a very good show across. So.
How does the live show compare to being in the studio for you guys? Is it pretty similar or very different?
The way the studio is, it's very different. And the reason why I find it, and anyway, think differently, but I certainly find it very, very different. The studio is a lot more structured. The studio is a lot more about, you know, and people that haven't been in the studio, or musicians, young musicians who want to go in the studio, it's something that's hard to kind of fathom to begin with. A lot of the time it's about setup. A lot of the time it's about finding the right sound. A lot of the time it's about making sure that you play everything, you know, not exceptionally well, but very, very, you get the right take as well. So there is a lot of repetition. It can be quite boring at times, and it can be very, very time-consuming. I know some other bands don't have that approach to studio work. I know some bands just go in and plug in and play at 11, and just generally what, you know, depending on what genre of music they're playing, for example, or, you know, one of the more arrows rock bands, you'd probably take that kind of approach. Because we're, you know, as our name indicates, we're meant to be the connoisseurs. We're meant to be playing sophisticated pop music. So if you've got that kind of image and that kind of goal or aim of the band, you need to be quite specific in the way you're recording yourself as well. And certainly our producer, Lee, does make sure that things are done very, very meticulously and done very well. And that can make the studio, as I said, very, very structured and very repetitive. The live scene, I think, differs a hell of a lot. Because even though you rehearse and you get yourself up to that level where you know you're tight, you know your songs very well, you've also got that little bit of element that you can be a bit free. And as Danny was referring to before with our bass player, Brendan, he certainly enjoys the live situation and lets him express himself a little bit more. And you've got, as long as you keep the structures there of the songs and the tightness there, fairly much with your rhythm section and such like, you've got more freedom to actually step out of the boundaries a little bit more wide. And I find that really, you know, really exciting. And,
yeah, I think probably a bit of a trap that fell into when the live side started was possibly trying to get the live side of it to be a complete mirror image of the recorded side. And I think we probably realised after a long time that it was taking away somewhat from the live side, and I've gone back to you know, rehearsing really, you know, well, basically our butts off, to get that live sound. But we're probably finding now it's concentrating more on keeping the studio and the live side separated, possibly pretty freeing us up, as Sean says, a lot more on the live side and probably allowing for a little bit more of our natural personalities to come through, but still sticking to that core structure of what is recorded on the album. But yeah, certainly bring us up a lot more, probably on stage.
So to take us out, it's been a very wide-ranging and an excellent interview. Why don't we finish with a song, and we've selected Look Behind You Now. What's that song about?
It's basically, there's a lot of my material it's written about. It's about a relationship. And I think the general theme with a lot of my songs are about relationships, whether it's a boyfriend, girlfriend scenario, or relationships with people in general. And that one specifically it's fairly much about telling someone that it's okay to let go, and telling someone that they don't need to be ashamed of themselves or feel bad about themselves or feel that they're anything lesser because they've had to let go of something. And I suppose that's the main theme of the song.
So here we are with the Connoisseurs, with Danny and Sean, and with their song, Look Behind You Now.
I see you waiting.
Welcome back to IRC FM episode 74. On the line we have Danny and Sean from The Connoisseurs. One small but very important part of The Connoisseurs. I hope you've enjoyed their music, and of course you'll be able to find out more about them by going to their website. There will be a link, of course, on the show notes at IRCFM.com. So guys, what's the plan for the future?
At the moment, as I said, we're taking a bit of a step back from the live scene. As Danny alluded to before, we're preparing for the release of our album, which is something, you know, sort of like bands have to think about these days, is how they release their album. Obviously, we're doing it independently, so do we just release it online digitally? Do we actually print physical copies out and try and work out a distribution deal physically as well? So we're working through that procedure at the moment. I'm a little bit incapacitated, and it gives me an opportunity even to just play around one-handed on piano at the moment, so I'm working on some new material. I have actually been recording a solo album as well, which I'm going to be pushing in the next 3 or 4 months. And from a performing live point of view, as Danny alluded to, we're going to just look at pinballing some very key gigs around the place, obviously trying to promote our material online and through our live performances as much as possible. And fairly much, you know, see if we can get some opportunities in that way and hopefully, you know, impress people enough in certain levels of the industry to probably get to that ultimate goal, maybe, you know, making a living out of our music. So.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up at the moment. As Sean said, he's out of action for a while, and nothing can really happen with the rhythm guitar, so the rest of us are on a bit of a holiday, and, Josh has been on one for about the last year, I think, but, it's mainly, the immediate future at the moment really is mainly concentrated around the album and getting the album out there. We're getting a lot of interest from people who are wanting to purchase it, so you know we have to make sure that we're doing the best thing for ourselves as the band, but also getting it out there available for the public. So that's where the immediate concentration lies, and hopefully something will happen on that in the very near future.
Is there a time frame on the album yet, when we can expect it, or is it a bit too early yet as we record this February 2010?
Well, things are, there's irons in fire at the moment, certainly as soon as we have it all confirmed, it will be announced on our website, but I'll say within a 3-month period, there will definitely be news on the release.
Awesome. Well, thanks guys for joining us. We'll have to stay in contact and we'll find out when the album is and, you know, give a couple of tracks a spin. It's been really great to talk to you guys, and good luck with, you know, first of all, the recovery.
Yeah, thanks, Eric.
You know, I know what it's like to be plastered and being restricted in, you know, things that you can do, and, you know, it's not as if it's like a broken leg or something like that. You can still play the guitar with a broken leg, but
yeah,
it's a bit more difficult in your situation.
It's torture, I can tell you that.
Oh, I can believe it. I can imagine that the first time when you get out of plaster, the first thing you'll be doing is reaching for the guitar, I reckon.
Yeah, like, certainly won't be the body surfing board again.
Exactly, yeah. I think I'm a lot better guitar player than I ever surfed, mate.
Awesome. So you've been listening to IRC FM episode 74 with Danny and Sean from The Connoisseurs. Thanks, guys. And as we say here across Channel IRC and IRC FM, wherever it is that I see you next on Channel IRC, good night, interweb. You have been listening to a Channel IRC production. Channel IRC and all 5 podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative, share-alike license registered in Australia. Music is used with direct permission or under agreements with various music providers. All rights to the music contained within remains with the original rights holder. Some sound effects are sourced from the Free Sound Project under Creative Commons. For more information about Channel Irk, go to www.channelirk.com.